Welcome to the award-winning Beverage Chronicles, the show where beer, wine, spirits, and everything in between get the spotlight. You'll hear the stories, meet the people, and discover the pours behind your favorite drinks. Here's your host, Gary Monteroso.
Thank you, and welcome to this week's episode of Beverage Chronicles. I'm your host, Gary Monteroso. We'll have several of our regular correspondents reporting in this week. But first, I want to start with a trend that seems to be gaining traction in the craft beverage world. And that is that breweries are not just brewing beer anymore, they're starting to distill whiskey. At first, that might sound like a strange pivot. Beer is beer, whiskey is whiskey, but technically, the connection is closer than most people think. Both begin with grain, water, yeast, and fermentation. The big difference is that beer stops after fermentation, while whiskey's fermented grain liquid, often called a distiller's beer, is distilled, concentrated, and then typically aged in barrels. For a brewery, that means the skills behind making a great malt-forward beer can translate naturally into a distinctive whiskey. A brewer already understands grain bills, fermentation character, yeast selection, flavor development, and barrel aging. In some cases, breweries can even distill a batch of beer into whiskey, although the process is more complicated than simply pouring IPA into a still. The industry even has a name for these hybrid businesses, the brewstillery. So, question is, why are breweries doing it now? The short answer is diversification. Craft beer is no longer the automatic growth story it was 10 or 15 years ago. The Brewers Association reported that U.S. craft beer retail sales fell 2.8% to $28 billion in its most recent national data. That does not mean craft beer is disappearing. It remains a major part of the beer business, but it does mean breweries are operating in a tougher, more crowded marketplace. Consumers have more choices than ever. Beer, bourbon, tequila, canned cocktails, hard seltzer, cider, non-alcoholic drinks, THC beverages were legal, and premium ready-to-drink cocktails. So breweries are trying to become beverage companies rather than businesses that depend entirely on taproom beer sales. Whiskey offers a few advantages. It can bring in customers who may come to a brewery with friends but do not drink beer. It can add higher-priced pours, cocktails, bottles, gift shop sales, and special releases. And it gives a brewery another reason for people to visit the tap room. Maybe they come in for a whiskey flight, then order a beer, or maybe it's the other way around. Industry observers have been clear that slowed craft beer growth is part of the reason breweries have expanded into spirits and RTD cocktails. The Brewers Association's chief economist has described spirits as an adjacent category where breweries see opportunity as beer growth slows. But here is the key question. Is making whiskey an attempt to bring people back to drinking beer? Not exactly. It's more accurate to say it's an attempt to bring people back to the brewery. Whiskey is not a magic funnel that turns a bourbon drinker into an IPA fan. Someone who dislikes beer may still prefer an old-fashioned, but a brewery distillery can capture a larger group at the same table. One guest gets a Pilsner, another gets a Manhattan, someone else orders a barrel-aged stout aged in that brewery's own whiskey barrels. The crossover is where the strategy gets interesting. A brewery can use whiskey to strengthen its beer identity. Think about barrel-aged stouts. Strong ales, barley wines, or even specialty releases aged in the producer's own bourbon or rye barrels. The whiskey program gives those beer releases a more authentic story, more control over the barrel supply, and a deeper connection between the two sides of the operation. Kentucky's Lexington Brewing and Distilling Company is one well-known example of the model. Pairing a brewery with a distillery and using fresh bourbon barrels in its barrel-aged beer program. Still, distilling is not an easy escape hatch. It requires licenses, capital, compliance, space, equipment, inventory management, and patience, especially for whiskey, which may need years in a barrel before it's ready. And whiskey itself is no longer a guaranteed growth category. American whiskey sales have faced recent softness as the market becomes more competitive. So, the takeaway is this. Breweries making whiskey are not waving a white flag on beer. They're adapting to a consumer who drinks across categories. The best brewstilleries are not asking, how do we replace beer? They are asking, how do we make our brewery a place worth visiting and buying from? Whether you want a lager, a cocktail, or both. That is the modern taproom. Less of a single product destination and more of a full beverage experience. Good food and great beverages have always gone hand in hand, but the right pairing can turn a simple meal into something memorable. From finding the perfect beer for a backyard burger to matching wine, spirits, and cocktails, or even non-alcoholic drinks with seasonal dishes, there's a whole world of flavor waiting to be explored. That's why we're excited to welcome a new voice to the program. That is chef and culinary contributor Christina Martin. In her reports, she will help us break down the basics of food and beverage pairing in a way that's approachable, useful, and most importantly, delicious. She will talk about what works, why it works, and how you can make better choices, whether you're cooking at home, hosting friends, heading to a restaurant, or simply looking for a new way to enjoy your favorite drink. So, grab a fork, pour yourself something good, and let's get into it. And here is Chef Christina Martin with food and beverage pairings.
I'm Chef Christina for Beverage Chronicles, where I explore simple, nourishing ways to bring food and beverages together. When people think about pairing food and beverages, they often think it's complicated, or something reserved for fine dining or special occasions. But from a chef's perspective, it's actually much simpler than that. It's really just about understanding balance. Every beverage has a flavor profile. It might be bitter, sweet, acidic, earthy, or floral. And food has the same language. Once you start thinking about it that way, pairing becomes less about rules and more about harmony. For example, if you're drinking something bitter like coffee or a hobby beer, pairing it with something rich or slightly sweet can create balance. Think coffee with toast or peanut butter. Or in my case, I love a smear of vegan butter on sourdough toast and then dipped in black coffee. Growing up, my aunt made coffee on the stove in a percolator, and the aroma of that coffee filled her South Philly row home with a smell that I will never forget. Another example is the salty snack that you might get at a bar that goes alongside an IPA, a salty peanuts, or popcorn. That contrast helps both the food and the drink feel smoother and more enjoyable. If your beverage is more acidic, like wine or citrus-forward cocktail, or even kombucha, and if you have not had kombucha on tap, you are surely missing out. That brightness can cut through rich and fatty foods. It actually makes heavier foods feel lighter. And if you're working with something more delicate, like green tea or a floral white wine, you want foods that support it, not overpower it. Think simple flavors, clean ingredients, gentle seasoning. The question I always come back to is simple. Is the beverage bold or is it delicate? And how do I support it or contrast it in the food that I serve with it? Because great pairings isn't about memorizing rules, it's about paying attention to flavor, having balance, and trusting your palate. Until our next segment, I'm Chef Christina. Cook simply, sip mindfully, and enjoy every bite.
Here on Beverage Chronicles, our contributors have plenty of knowledge. And our newest is already a fan favorite. Her promotional videos for the show, which you can find on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, have been hugely popular. And now you'll get to hear her insights right here on the show. So welcome aboard, Antra Adien.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Beverage Chronicles. My name is Antra, and in each episode, we take you behind the labels to meet the people, brands, and innovators shaping today's beverage world. from fine wines, craft beer, and premium spirits to coffee, tea, non-alcoholic beverages, and an emerging drink categories. On today's episode, we will explore two key principles that make brand storytelling more engaging and memorable. Let's start with an example. Instead of simply saying this is a family-owned winery, invite people into the experience. So let's try it differently. Close your eyes and imagine the afternoon sun reflecting through a glass raised in a family toast, the aroma of oak barrels and ripe grapes filling the air, the gentle clinking of glasses, joyful conversations, and memories being made across the generations. At the heart of every story, there are two things. First, your why, and second, the details that bring your story to life. The why isn't just a marketing concept, but a question we should ask about everything we do. Why was your brand created in the first place? Why do you do what you do? And why should people care? When the purpose is clear, your audience has something meaningful to connect with. The second thing is the power of sensory storytelling. This is especially powerful in hospitality, where language becomes one of our greatest tools. What does it feel like? What does it sound like? What does it smell like? What does it look like? Paint a picture. These details create emotion, and emotion is what drives engagement. The key takeaway? There's a difference between sharing information and inviting people to experience it with you. So think about the kind of connection you want to create. Cheers.
I'm going to close with a story on soda, specifically 7-Up. There is a full-blown soda renaissance happening right now. We are seeing new colas, new root beers, fresh Mountain Dew varieties, and even the so-called better-for-you sodas promising prebiotics and other wellness benefits. But one corner of the soda aisle has stayed surprisingly traditional, and that is lemon-lime. Sure, Sprite, Starry, and 7-Up have all introduced limited edition flavors from time to time. But for the most part, the classic lemon-lime formula has been treated like something you just don't mess with. Well, 7-Up is about to change that, at least a little. For the first time in more than 15 years, 7-Up is reformulating its core products. The brand, long known as the original Uncola, is shifting its flavor profile from lemon-lime to what it calls lime-lemon. Now, that change applies to regular 7-Up, 7-Up Zero Sugar, Cherry 7-Up, and Cherry 7-Up Zero Sugar. According to the company, the goal isn't to make 7-Up taste completely different. Instead, it says the new recipe will lean more heavily into lime, delivering a bolder, more refreshing flavor while keeping that familiar crisp lemon finish. And 7-Up is making sure shoppers notice. The cans are getting a redesign with a more modern look, a vertical 7-Up logo, and the words Lime Lemon displayed prominently on the package. The new formula is expected to begin to arrive in stores anytime, although it may take a little bit of time for retailers to sell through the current inventory. So, does it really taste different? Early taste testing suggests the answer is not by much. Side by side, the old and new versions reportedly look identical. The new Lime Lemon 7-Up may have a slightly cleaner, stronger aroma, and it seems to offer just a touch more zest and lime character. It also comes across as a little less sweet than the previous formula. But the difference is subtle enough that in a blind taste test, most longtime 7-Up drinkers probably would not immediately know which version they were drinking. So, if 7-Up is your go-to soda, there's no need to panic. The brand may be putting lime first on the label, but the familiar clean, crisp taste appears to be very much intact. We're out of time. See you next week on Beverage Chronicles.